Perhaps you never intended to be part of international relations. All you wanted to do was make sure the stuff you no longer needed could be recycled for use by somebody else. You've probably been recycling for years and not thinking much about where your recyclables end up. The answer was frequently China. China took about half the world's recyclable paper and plastics until late last year. That's when China put up the green fence and said it would no longer take most recycling loads because they had contaminants. That led to scrambling on our end to respond to the new reality, and what we can now put out for recycling has changed. We have four guests to help us understand this, all connected to the recycling and waste management business. Laura Liebrick is with Rogue Disposal and Recycling, based in Medford. She's the Community and Governmental Affairs Manager. She's in the studio with me. Laura, welcome. Laura McCaughan is with us as well. She is the president of the Northern California Recycling Association and the principal at Envirolutions, a company that's a member of the NCRA. Hi, Laura. Laura McCaughan, you there? I guess not. Sarah Grimm is planned to be with us as well. She's a waste reduction specialist at Lane County Public Works. Sarah, do we have you? No, Sarah. Brian Fuller, Western Regional Materials Management Program Manager for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Are you on the line? It looks like we'll need to reestablish our line. We're talking the red phone here is up, isn't it, Waleed? Okay, we're going to try to reestablish that connection. I'll talk to Laura Liebrick while we have a little time to get reconnected. So what have you been taking that you are no longer taking, I guess, is the nice short answer here.
Right. So first, I should definitely clarify that we are collecting in two different methods. We have the curbside collection program, and then there's also a depot collection program. And the big change really has been to our curbside program. As of March 5th, we announced that for our customers who are subscribers to Rogue Disposal and Recycling Services, we would be limiting the number of materials that are collected curbside to just four commodity types. I should narrow it down to the things that we eliminated from the program that we're asking people to keep out of the curbside carts. And that is glass, which is definitely considered a contaminant mixed in with other materials, unsorted mixed paper, which includes things like paperboard, fiberboard, cereal boxes, shoe boxes, junk mail, all of those things. We're asking that people keep that out. And then the other is basically all plastics except for milk jug style containers. However, we have been adding capacity at our depot so that we can collect, we can provide people with an opportunity to collect some of the things that can no longer be mixed in with other recyclables at the curb. And we're set up right now to collect glass at five different locations in our service areas, a few grocery stores that we've partnered with. And we are also now collecting high-grade office paper at our recycling depot out in White City.
All right. So if people do want to recycle glass or this office paper, they have to get in the car and deliver it themselves.
Correct. And that's because those materials cannot be mixed with the other materials. They can't go in the commingle.
How much notice did Rogue Disposal and Recycling or anybody get to what was going to happen with China? It sounds like you got a few months warning anyway.
Well, that's a really great question. China first started putting out signals, believe it or not, back in 2007, saying that they were very serious about taking up some, sort of environmental cleanup measures. One of them was going to be a crackdown on the waste that they were importing from other countries. Fast forward a number of years to 2013, when they enacted the green fence, got more specific about contamination in the recycling streams that they were receiving from all over the world. And then in July of 2017, they said, no, we're serious about the contamination. And as of January 1st, we are no longer going to be accepting what's called post-consumer mixed paper and post-consumer waste plastics. So I think a lot of people thought, they've been saying this since 2007. They said they meant it in 2013. Let's wait and see what really happens. So I think that there were a few people who did take the threat very seriously and have been looking at other signals that China's been giving off about, cleaning up the environment. So we had fair warning, I would say. But on January 1st, they did indeed kind of drop the hammer.
So let me understand, though, is it a strict prohibition, or is it them saying, you know, we'll take your loads, but the contaminant, it's 1%, is that what it is, contamination?
Yeah, it's actually less than 1% for some material streams. It's 0.5%, which is virtually unachievable for post-consumer streams of material, which is what we handle. Mm-hmm. It's not a ban, an outright ban, but they have set contamination levels so low that they're not achievable. So effectively, it's a ban. And they really have, I don't think there's much, if any, material at all moving to China right now that is made up of mixed unsorted paper or specifically plastics 3 through 7, resin code 3 through 7. Yeah.
3 through 7. Okay, mm-hmm. So these are when you flip your plastic mm-hmm. over and you look mm-hmm. at the little the recycling triangle, that there's the number in there.
Yeah, the little number in there. Yeah.
So wow. I mean, how what's it been like at Rogue Disposal and Recycling to get that? I mean, you've talked about this for a few months before you implemented. I think we had you on in January.
Yeah, actually, we were here in October when the word, you know, that we were first starting to take it very seriously, because the folks that we haul our mixed material to, Rogue Disposal just picks up material from people's homes. We pick up garbage. We pick up recyclables. We do very preliminary processing, virtually baling the material at a processing facility that we have in White City. And then we move it to recycling processors, material recovery facilities. And those MRFs, MRF, yeah, they started telling us in late summer, early fall, that they were starting to slow their lines down so that they could start sorting out more contaminants. Mm-hmm. They started talking more about, you know, cracking down on their end on contamination. And they were getting worried, frankly. So they told us that we may not be able to move material as effectively as we had in the past. So that put us on notice that things were seriously changing, and we were going to have to look at taking some fairly extreme measures.
Okay, so big changes in recycling, yeah, curbside, yeah, and yeah. A bunch of questions from our listeners. We're trying to get our other guests hooked up as well. Mm-hmm. Laura Liebrich is with Rogue Disposal and Recycling. Back to talk more with her and our guests and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about China and our recyclables. We didn't know there was much of a connection for many years, and suddenly we found out, yes, there was indeed a lot of recycled paper and plastic that we've been chucking out at the curb in the bin and hoping somebody could do something with, ended up in big bales on the China side of the ocean. And China finally said, you know what, that's too much stuff that isn't plastic, isn't paper, things like used diapers, stuff like that. And China finally pulled the plug and said at the end of last year, no more. So that means that what is taken at the curb in a lot of our communities has changed as well. We have Laura Liebrich from Rogue Disposal and Recycling. She's the Community and Government Affairs Manager in the studio with me. We're trying to get our other guests back on the line. Something kind of blew up on our conference call, but we're trying to get guests back from both California and Oregon as well into the mix. And you're welcome to join the discussion. You may have many questions about what can and can't be taken out to the curb anymore or taken to the recycling center as well. That has changed in community after community. Join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or email address jx@jeffnet.org. So the second part of the two-part question I was asking as we headed into the break was what the contact from the public has been like. I mean, you have been talking about this for quite a few months now, but
yeah,
but, it's a jarring change when you start, you get told that on March 5th, this changes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the things that customers have been contacting us about is, they're questions of, you know, clarifying questions. How do I know the difference between different kinds of plastics? Why will we take milk jug style containers only and not any other of that same type of plastic? They've been asking a lot of really great questions, and those are the people who tend to be avid recyclers. They've been people who've been doing it for a long time. They've been dedicated to it, and they are understandably a bit frustrated. What we are doing on our end is trying to create opportunities for people to recycle what we're calling beyond the curb. And that's going to mean that people have to go to a little bit more trouble. It's not going to be as simple as just dumping everything you want to get rid of into one cart and having that go away.
All right, a couple of other guests we can bring into the conversation now. Sarah Grimm is a waste reduction specialist at Lane County Public Works. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange. And we're also getting hooked up Laura McCon, who's the president of the Northern California Recycling Association, NCRA, which is a collection of a bunch of other agencies that do recycling. So she's also the principal at a company called Envirolutions. And we'll get her on the phone in, actually, I think we have her on the phone now. Let me pick up this call from Laura McCon. You there?
I am here.
Okay, good to have you. Thanks for joining us on the Exchange today. So since you can talk on behalf of a number of communities, can you tell us among the communities in California that you speak to how big the changes have been there in curbside recycling?
Well, what we're hearing from communities in the Bay Area specifically, and that's the areas that the Northern California Recycling Association serves the most, is that they are still stockpiling materials to the degree that they can. Nobody has adjusted their recycling collection programs, and the goal is to not do that. We don't want to move back on collected items. We really want to see market adjustments and to encourage more market development, especially here in the state of California, for some of those plastics. Especially.
And then let's hear from Sarah Grimm at the Lane County Public Works. Same kinds of changes in your community?
Well, we do have our largest cities in Lane County are not changing their program as yet. They're considering a change. But the smaller haulers in our community, the smaller cities, and our Lane County transfer stations, of which we have 15 scattered across the county, we have been, I wouldn't say forced, but we needed to change our program in order to find somebody who would ship it off and sort it and market it. So we took, last October, we took plastics off the table, out of the stream. No plastics allowed in the commingled recycling, except for milk plastic, that HDPE number 2 without colorant. And we've been riding that change ever since, and it's going pretty good. We've got nice, clean material.
What is the deal with the milk jugs, that they are the thing, the kind of plastic still taken?
You want me to answer that?
Go ahead, yeah, Laura, take it.
Okay. Sorry, Sarah. I've gotten this question a lot lately, and you probably have too. The tricky thing about plastics is, because of the range of materials they can be made out of, you can't just specify a resin type. That doesn't work for the processors. So we have specified by resin type and by shape of container so that you can easily distinguish that from other resin types. Those milk jug style containers are always HDPE number 2.
Mm-hmm. And what happens to those?
Well, they're easy to get. They're easy to pick, basically, off a sort line, right?
Mm-hmm. But then again, where do they end up? I mean, are they melted into something else?
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Windshields or something.
Those end up being cleaned and flaked, and they go through a secondary processing before they become a feedstock, basically, for manufacturing new plastic products.
Could they end up being other milk jugs later on? I mean, is it that possible?
I suppose they could. Quite likely they become packaging.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. All right. So it seems like Brian Fuller's on the line with us now from the Oregon DEQ as well. Brian, welcome.
Yes. Hello. Thank you.
Glad you could join us, sorry with the problems with the phones. So give us a sense of whether this is primarily a West Coast issue, the recyclables with China, because we are on that side of the continent and therefore close to ports that ship to China?
I think it's a worldwide issue, but we're certainly feeling the effects here first on the West Coast in Oregon. A lot of the products that China manufactures get shipped to our West Coast ports, and over the years we've relied on sending those containers back to China filled with our waste paper and waste plastic. So our markets, our local markets, have disappeared slowly over time, so we rely to a larger extent on China than the rest of the country.
So we
everybody's feeling it.
All right, so we had domestic markets to handle the materials, and over time, since it was just cheaper and easier, we just bailed them up and sent them off to China?
Essentially, yes.
All right. Laura McCon, I wanted to ask you, because it seems like there are some of the recycling entities in California are still able to ship to other countries in Asia. What do you know about that?
Yeah, well, developing new international markets. I know that for plastic specifically, Malaysia has stepped in to pick up some of the slack. And then with the diminishing paper markets, some of that is going to South Korea. So we are seeing that some of the international markets are just being supplanted. And what we're hearing is it's kind of a week-to-week thing. You know, the facilities are stockpiling the material as long as they can through their permits, but they're able on some weeks to move stuff, and then other weeks they might have to send some of that material to landfill. At this point, the value proposition is still in staying with the accepted materials and finding markets elsewhere, while we are hoping to develop those markets in California as well, develop more manufacturing, especially, again, of the plastics.
So the stuff is still coming in from people putting things out at the curb to recycle and taking it to recycling centers, but sometimes it's sitting for a while waiting for basically a window to open.
Correct. Yeah, and that's always been the case with these commodities. You know, there's been various reasons why things might get stockpiled. There is a limit to the amount of time that any given facility can stockpile those materials. And so within that permit, if they exceed that time, then they have to move those things. If they can't move them by selling them, then they have to move them by landfilling them. And that is happening for sure. I don't want to sugarcoat that. But at this point, the challenge of changing the programs on a permanent basis, changing the consumer perception that, you know, that we're moving backwards and that recycling doesn't matter anymore, you know, the facilities and the municipalities are sticking with the programs as they are.
All right. We're talking about recycling changes here on the Jefferson Exchange, and all our guests are in the operation now with us. Laura Liebrich from Rogue Disposal and Recycling in the studio with me, Community and Government Affairs Manager. You just heard Laura McCon, who's the president of the Northern California Recycling Association. We also have Sarah Grimm from Lane County Public Works and Brian Fuller, who's the Western Region Materials Management Program Manager for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, which gives him the longest title of the day. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3700. And I have lots of questions. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm going to take a call here. So you're going to hear a couple of pops on your end, Brian Fuller, because we had to park you on a line that has to be put on hold in order to take other calls. So just stand by, and we will take this call from Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy. The question that jumps immediately to my mind is, why aren't we doing more recycling ourselves as opposed to outsourcing it to China, Malaysia, wherever? I mean, it seems like if it's a good idea, it's a good idea for us as well as a good idea for them.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate that. Now, Brian Fuller gave us some sense of the fact that there were markets in this country. Laura McCon, I want to pitch that to you as well, because being from Northern California, there's lots of people in the areas that that you and your members serve. I mean, have there been markets in Northern California as well that were vibrant and then weren't?
Well, I want to actually get to the point of why we started shipping so much stuff to China in the first place. It was basically a value proposition where all of the cheap plastic stuff that we're purchasing here in the United States was coming in on shipping containers that were going back empty. And so the market said this is an opportunity to have a cheap shipping system to a country that is able to recycle more efficiently than we are in the United States, because they have more labor-intensive practices that they can afford to do. They recycle more types of resins, and they have more manufacturing of plastic there than we've ever had in the United States. So that's why the shift moved so significantly to China in the first place. And, you know, that's why it's been so catastrophic for them to say that they're not taking our plastics anymore. Fully over 60% of our materials that are exported to China. So right now, the real challenge is, how do we get that manufacturing capacity built up here? It was never to the level of what we've seen in China. And a lot of that is challenges in the cost of labor, Cost of storing materials, especially where we are in Northern California, cost of warehouse space. So those are some of the challenges to building infrastructure in the United States. However, California does have incentives for, especially again, plastics, for remanufacturing plastic products right here in the state. So that's our efforts. They're burgeoning. They're not where they need to be, but that's where we are right now.
All right, so let me understand two things. Number one, I understand the backhaul part of this. I understand that people in the transportation business do not like empty railroad cars, truck trailers, containers, and ships. So they want to make sure there's something in, and sending recycling to China certainly takes care of part of that. But the other part of that, are you saying that if we had more manufacturing in the United States, we would then also have more markets for these materials?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's both more manufacturing and then also manufacturing that can utilize that recycled content. You know, especially in the case of paper manufacturing, we've seen a lot of our paper mills close in the United States, and they're not really able to utilize the exact same equipment to manufacture paper out of virgin feedstock than they are out of the paper that they're getting from a single stream recycling system, which is often quite dirty, contaminated from liquids and things like this. So it's both a building up of our manufacturing infrastructure and making sure that that infrastructure is built to handle recycled feedstock as well as virgin, you know, to handle the flexibility with changing commodity prices.
All right. We have a pretty straightforward question here from Larry in Arcata, who says, what percent of what we put in our recycling cans is actually recycled? Laura Liebrich, you want to take that one?
That's a really great question. And that the answer to that question is going to vary by state, by region, by city. We are currently, we actually just over the last couple of weeks, we at Rogue Disposal did some samples, took some samples of the material coming in on our commingled routes and literally, dug into it, got dirty and separated everything out. And we're in the process of analyzing the data, but, you know, just eyeballing it, it looked like probably 20 to 25% of that material is pure garbage, material that has never been recyclable, technically. And another, probably approaching 20% of that material were materials that China is no longer wanting. So that gives you an idea.
Brian Fuller, we talked with one of your counterparts at DEQ a few months ago about the concept of wishful recycling. This is a major part of the issue, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, years ago we used to collect our recycling in the little blue bins, and the driver would get out of the truck and throw the materials into the different containers on the truck. Now we put everything in one big roll cart, and I think people just, you know, they have an item and they think it should be recyclable or want to try to do the right thing, and so they throw it in that bin, and you know, the system doesn't see it until it gets to the material recovery facility or sorting factory. So that is a big part of the issue. We really need to make sure that people are paying attention to what the changes to the programs are and what they can put in the recycling bin. Putting something in there, you know, wishing it would be recycled really just jeopardizes the whole system.
Now, Laura Liebrich, you brought an oops card in with you that tells people that there was a problem with your pickup today. So explain what this is and where it's going to be attached.
Right. So, you know, as we're entering this new age of, identifying contamination and contamination sort of making or breaking the success of our curbside recycling programs, we know there's an absolute need for us to be able to communicate on a very regular basis with our customers and let them know at the point of contact, literally, like, you know, on their cart, whether or not there were contaminants in their recycling. So we have put cameras in all of our trucks now. We call them hopper cams. So when that material is dumping out of the cart and into the hopper of the truck, the driver can see it on a screen. They can quickly, with our new mix, they can quickly identify contaminants. They can fill out what we're calling an oops tag and leave it on the cart, letting people know we did empty your cart today, but these are the things that were in there that we would like you to not put in there next time. And then the next time the driver goes and to service that particular account, they'll actually get out and lift the lid and look before they dump it. We know that communication has to happen. I know that that's been a problem all the way up and down the line, and it's part of the reason that we're in the situation that we're in now with so much contamination in our recycling streams. We've got to clean it up.
Sarah Grimm, do you have something like an oops card heading out with the recycling crews in Lane County?
We have some of the haulers are literally leaving material behind because some are not automated. And I believe if you are doing oops cards, the dynamic I've heard is that since we have a competitive system, it's hard for to give a negative experience to customers because then they'll lose that customer. So we're hoping to do across-the-board changes and enforcement, or at least education, to create the dynamic where people remember clothing, plastic bags, stringy things. These do not belong in your curbside bin. So we're going aggressive on the outreach and education.
All right, both, I should point out, too, that both Lane County Public Works and Rogue Disposal and Recycling have linked to this great video by the journalism organization GRIST that I'll see if we can link on our website as well, that just tells the story pretty well, and it tells the story through the life of a salad container. Oh, you finished your lunch salad. You thought, I can recycle this, covered with salad oil and bits of lettuce and things like that. We'll talk more about the things that can and can't be recycled in the world now that China has said, no, we're not going to take your paper and plastic anymore because it was too dirty. We're going to come back and talk more with Brian Fuller, Sarah Grimm, Laura McCon, and Laura Liebrick when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're having a somewhat overdue discussion, actually, about recycling, which has changed in our part of the world because of the fact that China no longer takes a lot of the products that we used to bail up and send over in shipping containers to China for China to deal with in recycling. So now all that paper and plastic that we used to put in the bins, it has to go someplace else. In some cases, it can still go to other countries, and frankly, less developed countries will still take some of these products. Vietnam, Malaysia have been mentioned. But the fact is that we got to find ways to deal with our recycling differently, and it has resulted in changes in what we can put at the curb and at our local recycling centers. We have Laura Liebrick from Rogue Disposal and Recycling, Laura McCon from the Northern California Recycling Association, Sarah Grimm from Lane County Public Works, and Brian Fuller from Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Short question first from Becca in Lane County, who wants to know, are a lot of these plastics going to landfills? And what about big crowded cities? Sarah Grimm, can you take that on? You don't have a hugely crowded city, but you got Eugene. Sarah Grimm, you still there?
It's my understanding. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Generally, the plastics that are being put in the recycling today are probably going up to the material recovery facilities. And to the extent that the facility has not been clogged with plastic bags and incorrect materials, the effectiveness is pretty good that they'll pull out the correct plastic, such as the bottle, tub, and jug shape. If it is a number one plastic tray of any kind or a number six plastic tray, if it doesn't conform to the bottle, tub, or jug, it's going to probably end up in a paper bale, and that is the problem. That is what caused this problem. And so it's my understanding that it's week by week. It's much what Laura was describing in Northern California. The recovery facilities are saying that material is moving, but very slowly. Very little of it, if it was the correct material, is by percentage is being landfilled at this time.
All right, another email here from Tim in Eureka who says, I remember when we had three recycling bins for glass, metal, and paper. It seems the mixed bin strategy has become too sloppy, confusing, poor accountability, etc. Two, he says, in order to reuse, what number of plastic can be put in the dishwasher and reused at home? And then he asks the question about why ship to China. And he asks specifically about local businesses with California environmental standards could then share those standards with the world. That's from Tim in Eureka. Laura McCon, I'm going to pitch that your way.
Well, first I want to kind of bring it back to what we as consumers can do to ensure that the stuff we put in our recycling bin is getting recycled. You know, I heard before the residual amounts, I believe that Sarah was talking about. We have much lower residual. Residual is the stuff that comes through the recycling system that we send to landfills. Ours tend to be around between the 10 and 15% range. So we want customers to continue to recycle. We want them to recycle right, knowing what the rules are, knowing what types of plastics are accepted in your program. So know your local program. We know it's confusing, but study up. And we're also encouraging folks to clean their plastic out of that food, as you mentioned in the Grist video. You know, ones and twos plastics have the strongest markets, especially in California. So those would be if you have the choice to buy, you know, one or something packaged in a one or two plastic versus other types of plastic, that's a great option. But really, why don't we look at and put the, you know, onus back on ourselves as consumers to say, do we need to generate so much plastic? How about reusables? Are we using a reusable water bottle instead of buying disposables, you know, and having that be the solution instead of why isn't China taking our stuff anymore? The answer is why don't we generate less? Because recycling is a good thing. It's better than landfilling, but it is not an end-all, be-all solution. And I don't have a good answer for the dishwasher question, so sorry, I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on that. I generally don't think plastics in a dishwasher would be a good idea.
Okay, the one person I can see is Laura Liebrich, and she's shaking her head no, so I'll consider that's a unanimous thing. I do want to ask, though, about cost, because it seems like that I know since I am a customer of Recology, who's not represented here today, which is doing things a bit differently from Rogue Disposal and Recycling, that they have raised rates a bit as a surcharge for handling materials. Now, Sarah Graham, you mentioned a competitive situation in Lane County. So I mean, is it getting to the point where some of the people who are handling materials are getting into the red?
I believe so. I don't have knowledge of other companies' financial situations, but it is very likely to be very difficult right now for the collection services.
Which then could mean that there's going to be more surcharges for customers. So I assume that's going to be part of the picture potentially.
Yes. In most communities, there is some sort of either franchising or licensing, some sort of rate structure coordinated by the local government. So in the city of Eugene, the city is involved and sets a maximum and minimum. And they are in the process. Haulers have come to them saying we need to raise that rate. And so they're in the process of researching and identifying what they should do at the time. And I imagine just about every community across the state is going through that.
Brian Fuller at the DEQ, is there a concern that we are on the verge of the recycling system collapsing, that we get to a what's the point moment where people just say, the hell with this, I'm just going to throw everything in my trash can and call it good?
Jeffrey, I don't think we're anywhere near that point at this time. Recycling's never been free. You know, again, going back to some of the earlier comments, you know, what we're collecting recycling to provide industry with feedstocks so they can make more stuff. Prices have always gone up and they've always gone down. Right now we're just witnessing a major market disruption. So in some parts of the state, it does cost more to recycle than to landfill. And as you pointed out, Ashland, the city of Ashland's made the decision to continue recycling. Other cities have not, but we will be, you know, looking at that. The cost issue will be a factor, and it always has been. It's just out of whack right now.
So you think things will settle down in a few months?
You know, it's tough to have the crystal ball. I know people, you know, the material is still moving, you know, slower than it was to China. But I can't predict that, you know, when we'll be out of this market disruption.
Laura Liebrich, you have some thoughts?
Sure, I do. On the cost factor, and you know, speaking as a hauler, I can say that it's been a painful thing over the last couple of years to watch the cost of recycling go up and up and up. We have made some fairly aggressive moves to change our curbside recycling program as a result of watching these costs escalate. We were in front of our ratepayers about a year and a half ago, starting about 2 years ago, talking about the upward pressures that we were feeling, that we were experiencing. experiencing on the recycling end of our business. And we had a significant rate increase in our service areas on January 1st of 2017. At that time, the relative cost of managing recyclables was about on par with the cost of disposal, of managing garbage. Since in the last calendar year, we have seen the cost, the relative cost of managing recyclables triple. Since that time.
Cost of managing the recycles.
Triple. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And let me be clear, the fundamental reason these costs are increasing is markets are clamping down. There's endless supply, endless and growing supply of material and diminished demand. Yes, this is probably going to be something that will resolve within a few years as we develop domestic, capacity, domestic demand, hopefully, and as other markets are developed in other parts of the world. But the bottom line is our material is dirty. We have to clean it up. We are spending a lot of money right now sending garbage along with some valuable recyclables to other parts of the state, other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And if we can get that material out, we can contain costs.
Go ahead.
I'd like to clarify what Laura was saying about sending garbage and farm material is dirty. In most cases, it's not been sorted successfully because there's so much of the wrong materials going on. It's not physically. In some cases, it is, but predominantly, most people are doing the right thing and rinsing their materials. We're talking about the difficulty of sorting out the commingling materials. I'd like to point out that we have a lot of success stories, and recycling is not dead. The Oregon Bottle Bill is a great place to get all of your cans and bottles and even plastic bottles recycled, and those are recycled right here in Oregon very successfully. The grocery bag system, when you take your plastic bags to the grocery store, Safeway, Albertsons, the larger ones, they are at that material, source separated in a segregated single stream, is sent to manufacturing plants that make plastic lumber right here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And lastly, styrofoam, in Lane County anyway, St. Vincent de Paul has purchased a condensing equipment that allows them to accept styrofoam from the public, and then they can sell that to the manufacturer, because by condensing it, it becomes ready for remanufacture. So recycling is not dead. We just need to learn how to get uncontaminated material from the curb.
All right, two emails here, one from Mike in Medford, one from John in Klamath Falls, with similar themes, and it's about the plastics. Mike in Medford says we shouldn't be using petrochemicals to make containers. It's toxic to humans and the environment. And John suggests that only recyclable materials be manufactured, not materials that go to landfills. Let's take a call here from Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on recycling.
Hi. I was just writing down packaging should be either compostable or reusable, and we should put the onus on the manufacturers to make packaging that is either reusable or recyclable. I just recently bought compostable little, what we used to call Ziploc bags, plastic sandwich bags. Mm-hmm. And I just think we also need to include in the price of the product the packaging and what it does to our environment if it's not recyclable, or when it breaks down, it hurts wildlife, et cetera, stuff like that. And then another thing I've been thinking about, ever since that China has stopped taking our recyclables, why don't we have a facility here in the U.S.? Because not only is it not good to not be able to recycle our products, all the fossil fuels that it takes to ship all that stuff over there and all the pollution. And I know it's expensive. I've heard a couple responses to that question, but it seems like we need to charge the amount. We need to make it profitable, and people need to take responsibility when they buy a product to look at the packaging and to determine if it's worth it. And that's what I've been doing ever since China stopped taking plastics. I have changed my shopping strategy. I no longer buy. I used to buy soy milk and almond mm-hmm. milk and stuff like that. Now I found a farmer down the road, and I take a glass container once a week, and I get fresh milk from a dairy cow and reuse the milk like they used to do in the old days.
So okay, Pam,
why don't we have a facility here in the U.S. for recycling plastic? And if not, why can't we get that going? That's
okay,
my question.
Thanks, Pam. Appreciate thanks. That. Brian Foley, you want to take that one? Brian?
I can take it.
Go.
Sure.
What we're collecting is commodities for industry that manufactures stuff. A lot of our manufacturing has left the United States. So, yeah, it would be great if we have local markets here to manufacture our stuff. But right now that's not the case, and it's going to take a while to do that. I just wanted to put a couple things in perspective real quick, if I could. 2016, Oregon recycled 1.4 million tons of material. And so from October till now, when we started experiencing this market disruption, you know, we've disposed of a little over 8,000 tons. So majority of our material is still being recycled. I mean, that's less than 2% of the average monthly recycling that we do. So I wholeheartedly agree that, you know, as consumers, we should be paying attention to what we buy and trying to reduce the amount of waste that we generate. Garbage isn't free. You got to buy it to begin with.
Now, what about the compostable part of this?
That's
a mixed bag.
That's really tricky. Oops,
all right. Sorry. All right, everybody's saying it's really tough. A couple seconds left here. Laura Lieberman.
You know, just from a life cycle analysis standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, to make something that's compostable, you're taking land, you're fertilizing it, you're growing a crop, you're taking water. A lot more inputs. It's not as clear-cut as it would first seem.
All right, a very different world in which we live now that China has put up the green fence and said we're not going to take recyclables from the world if they're contaminated, and the contamination levels they want are apparently unattainable from what we're being told by the folks who pick it up in America. So things have changed at the curb in a lot of communities. I want to thank our guests for joining us today, Laura Liebrick, the Community and Government Affairs Manager from Rogue Disposal and Recycling, Laura McCon, the President of the Northern California Recycling Association, Sarah Grimm, Waste Reduction Specialist at Lane County Public Works, and Brian Fuller, the Western Region Materials Management Program Manager for Oregon DEQ. Thank you all.